You may be seated. Our last case this morning is 13-459, Tori Auer et al. Versus Jamie Poliath et al. For the appellant, Mr. Piper.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court and my learned friend and colleague, Mr. Lasky, I have the privilege and pleasure today of representing the owners and agents.
Counsel,
of
excuse me, could you move the microphone up a bit so we can hear you better?
My
Thank
apologies.
You.
I represent the appellant in this action, Keller Williams Hometown Realty. I'd like to respectfully reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. I should also like to gratefully acknowledge the assistance in this case of the Ohio Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors, who submitted briefs on our behalf. I think the fact that they did so speaks volume about the importance of the disposition of this action to the real estate profession in Ohio and elsewhere. I think the court is aware that there are two main issues involved in this appeal. The first is what we submit to be the erroneous decision of the Court of Appeals, the Second District Court of Appeals, relative to the issue of how it establishes a rule of liability for real estate brokers in Ohio for the intentional misconduct of a real estate licensee associated with it. And secondly, the other issue in this involves the erroneous decision of the trial court in this particular matter relative to the jury instruction it gave on vicarious liability. I'm mindful that the court has thoroughly reviewed the briefs, and so I won't spend much time on the facts, but there are some I'd like to point out.
Counsel, let me see if I can make this simple for me. When we're talking about intentional misconduct and we're talking about respondeat superior, obviously if someone departs from the scheme of the employment, they're going to be outside the shelter of the employer. I think everybody agrees with that. But what about in a case such as this, where the money is flowing to both parties? Doesn't that really carry the day?
If you're referring, Your Honor, to the fact that it is an undisputed fact that my client received a small commission from some of these properties, I suppose.
Take away the word small. Yes, a commission.
A commission. Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that the definition of a benefit in this case, if you define it as being duped by a real estate agent associated with you who duped a client who violated the provisions of Chapter 4735, who violated her independent contractor's agreement, that is obviously not the conduct that my client would accept. As it turns out, in this case, it did receive a commission from the properties here. These properties included ones that Tori Auer, the appellee, and Jamie Poliath, the rogue agent, purchased together. In fact, what doesn't come through on paper, perhaps as well as it should, Your Honor, is the fact that from the get-go, Jamie Poliath, the former Keller Williams agent, embarked on a scheme to convince Tori Auer to buy, rehab, and then manage these properties. Tori Auer was in California. She comes and she sees these properties on the internet. She comes and meets with Jamie Poliath, who unquestionably was associated with Keller Williams' hometown at that point. And the first thing they do is they meet at a separate office location that Jamie Poliath owned and operated, and where she owned and operated other businesses, such as A1 Property Management, such as Miami Valley Home Improvement.
But counsel, isn't it undisputed in the record that the transactions being reviewed by this court today did go through the Keller Williams account?
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you therefore say to a third party, this was outside our scope of employment, or this, we had nothing to, to use a phrase, we had nothing to do with this?
Your Honor, again, the fact that Jamie Poliath was associated with Keller Williams' hometown. The fact that Keller Williams' hometown received a commission from these transactions, those solitary facts are undisputed. But I would submit that this court's precedent has never looked at those kinds of facts in isolation and said, period, end of story. In fact, this court's precedent has been quite to the contrary, looking at all the facts and circumstances, including, I would submit, the motivation of the intentional tortfeasor. Here, again, buying properties was a small aspect of an overarching scheme by Jamie Poliath because she was running these other companies to rehab them and management.
Was she acting in the course and scope of her employment or the agency relationship with Keller Williams during this period?
She left Keller Williams in the middle of this, but I'm sorry, was she in certain of her actions? We don't believe so, because she was duping.
When did she leave the scope of employment, in your view?
In a chronological sense, she departed in December of 2007, prior to the last of the properties being closed.
Well, that was the end of the relationship.
Correct.
Up until that point in time, was she acting within the course and scope of the agency relationship?
Not insofar as it pertains to the appellee in this matter, Your Honor, because she was duping the appellee.
Well, the jury said she fraudulently induced the purchase.
Excuse me?
The jury made a determination of fraudulently inducing the purchase.
That's correct. And I'm going to discuss how it came that finding through the erroneous jury decision. But again, this was all part of an aspect of an overarching scheme, Justice O'Donnell, that because these properties were to be managed by a completely unlawful entity, A1 Property Management, it's etched in stone under Chapter 4735 that there has to be a broker associated with property management. When Jamie Poliath was dealing with Tory Auer, that entity did not have a broker. When she was dealing with...
So Keller was not the broker for the purposes of the management.
Exactly so.
Did the jury find that Keller was the broker for the purposes of the management company?
That issue was not presented to the...
Okay. The jury is only finding Keller Williams Realty to be the broker while Ms. Poliath was acting as an agent under the umbrella of the brokerage of Keller Williams to sell these properties, correct?
Correct. Again.
And they say that, you know, she induced Ms. Auer to buy the properties, that is what the liability is for.
In this specific instance, yes, Your Honor, that was what the jury found through this, the erroneous jury instruction. Again, the Court of Appeals said, though, period, end of story, which I think because she was an agent, she hadn't left Keller Williams yet, and because Keller Williams received a commission, and it is factually undisputed that Keller Williams knew about none of these misdeeds.
Well, counsel, I think we all accept the argument that your client Keller Williams would have not tolerated any of this, would have terminated the relationship much earlier had they known all of those kinds of things. But in terms of the litigation that unfolded here, doesn't one have to look at, and I assume that's the way the judge charged it and the facts, and I'm not asking you to go into all of those, but what did the woman in California see? What was she dealing with? What was the perception that she had?
And I'm talking signage, whose name's on the contracts, all of the things that would lead a person interested in buying real estate to believe that they were dealing with your client.
Well, Your Honor,
And isn't that what was presented to the jury?
No, Your Honor. I think Your Honor might be suggesting a somewhat of a theory of apparent authority here, and that was not pursued at the trial court level. It has not been pursued throughout any part of this litigation, and for good reason, because, again, Jamie Poliath, the rogue agent, had her own office where she was running all these businesses. That's where she met
Well, Hour. Whose sign was out in front of these properties? Was it a multiple listing deal?
Certain of them were listed through Keller Williams, certainly.
Okay, so when the lady from California comes to Ohio to kick the tires on these properties, she sees a Keller Williams sign in the front yard.
Correct.
And when she signs the agreement to purchase, it's on a contract that I assume says Keller Williams across the top.
It's standard Dayton Area Board of Realtors contract, Your Honor.
Yeah, but whose name's on it?
Well, it says through, it's handwritten in through Keller Williams, yes.
All right.
As an aspect of the overall scheme that Jamie Poliath was engineering.
Mr. Piper, could I ask you about this relationship, because we seem to be coming at it in different ways. And you use the term several times, associated with.
Yes.
That she was associated with Keller Williams. In your brief, you talk a bit about the independent contractor relationship. Can you tell us, and the licensing that a broker needs to go through, can you walk us through that so we all are on the same page?
Certainly, Your Honor. The Ohio Association of Realtors brief lays this out very nicely. There are two levels, a broker and a sales agent under Chapter 4735. A sales agent is associated with a broker and has to work through a broker, essentially. Again, that's what made, in this case, A1 Property Management and TIG, another one of Jamie Poliath's rogue organizations, unlawful. They didn't have a broker.
So she is not an employee of KW?
That's correct. She was an independent contractor in this instance. She violated several provisions of her contract. She violated several provisions of Chapter 3745. She was actually competing against my client because she was running A1 Property Management while still licensed with Keller
Williams. Counsel, isn't that really ignoring, I think what Justice Lansinger is asking is, in the contracts involved here, the agent had no authority to enter into a contract unless they worked through a broker, correct? An agent can't sell real estate in Ohio independently, can they?
An agent has to be associated with a broker, yes.
So in order for this entire transaction to happen, there had to be, if not Keller Williams, it could be Smythe Kramer or whoever, there has to be an agent, correct?
There has to be an agent associated with a broker.
And correct. I think the question before this court is the third-party person from California. How do they know that they're dealing with a rogue agent if the brokers are insulated because they say, well, we didn't know this was happening, and I'm sure they didn't, you know, because it's not good business anyhow. I'm sure they're innocent as to knowledge, but as to responsibility, aren't the brokers responsible for what's happening under their license?
Not as a matter of law, Your Honor. Again, what you're suggesting is almost an apparent authority theory, and I'm mindful that you'd spoken.
No, I'm talking about real authority. They can't work without a broker.
They are certainly not authorized to commit fraud on Keller Williams Watch. They're not authorized to violate the independent contractor agreement. They're not authorized to violate 4735 and to compete against Keller Williams, hence outside the scope.
Does 4735 speak to the legal relationship between the broker and its associate and this associated agent? Does it call it an employment relationship, an agency relationship? independent contractor? What does it say?
It merely says, Your Honor, that an agent, a salesperson, has to be associated with a broker.
So isn't that part of the problem here? We have to decide what the relationship is between the broker and this associated agent?
It's undisputed that there was a broker, that she, Jamie Blythe, was an agent until she left. But the scope of her duties and obligations, the fact that she flat out violated every one of them, very much throws the scope of her agency into question and presents a jury question for a properly instructed jury, which is what I'll have to address during my rebuttal.
So then are you saying at some point there was an agency relationship between the two?
Yes.
Okay.
At some point. Justice Lansinger.
But, before you sit down, could I ask you one further question, Mr. Piper?
Certainly.
As I understand this, your objection or your principal objection is to the jury instruction that was given by the trial court to the effect that if you find Jamie Paliff committed fraud, and I'm skipping through it, then defendant Keller Williams is vicariously liable, and you must find in favor of the plaintiff Tory Hour against Keller Williams. Is that your principal objection?
As to the, there are sins of omission and commission in the jury instruction, Your Honor. That's the principal one.
Was there an objection to that jury instruction?
Yes, Your Honor.
There was?
Yes.
And was it overruled by the trial court?
It was, and at the appellate level, there was a suggestion that there was some waiver to that. The Court of Appeals addressed that, said there was no waiver. And that issue has not been cross-appealed or otherwise.
So your issue is the instruction that if the agent, the selling agent, committed fraud, then you vicariously enter a judgment against Keller Williams. Your view is that there should have been a further instruction that agent had to have been acting within the course and scope of either the agency relationship or the contract of the independent contractor arrangement with the broker. Is that your argument in
sum and substance, Your Honor, the most egregious aspect of the jury instruction I would submit, the most prejudicial, is the language saying that if you find that Jamie Paliff committed fraud, you must find against Keller Williams.
Well, if that agent had been acting within the course of the contractual relationship with the broker, would that be an incorrect instruction?
It's confusing and ambiguous. It could be, Your Honor.
Could be liability.
There could be. In this particular instruction, there was some language, there was some mention of scope and deviation from scope.
Was there a request that there be a separate finding that Keller Williams participated in the fraud?
No, Your Honor. It was never suggested that Keller Williams ratified, acquiesced, or anything like that.
All right. Well, at least I think I understand what you're arguing to us. Thank you.
So, counsel, are you telling us that there was an agency relationship and that agency relationship was breached once she became this rogue agent that was out there, you know, with her own real estate company, her own rehab company, et cetera?
Well, she certainly was a Keller Williams agent/independent contractor since 2006, insofar as it pertains to her dealings, though, with Tory Auer. She went far afield as part of her scheme.
Okay, so let me maybe understand this. She had other real estate transactions that she was the agent for in addition to Ms. Auer's. Correct?
Correct. She was licensed with.
Yes. So she sold other properties.
Correct.
And brought revenue to your company.
Correct.
And those were legit.
There's no suggestion to the contrary.
Okay. And then on these properties that only relate to Ms. Auer, she incorporated her Genie Real Estate Company, her home improvement company, et cetera, just on these very limited number of properties.
Correct.
Okay, and so you're saying that she exceeded her agent, independent contractor relationship for this select group?
In this case, in her involvement with Ms. Auer, yes. And a jury instruction, a correct jury instruction, is what we asked for.
And you would have preferred, I mean, I'm presuming your trial strategy was that your agency, Keller Williams, was as much a victim as Ms. Auer was in the fact that you were utilized to perpetrate this fraud.
Absolutely. Yes.
Is there was there testimony on how the agency, excuse me, the realty company, your realty company, could have prevented this?
No, quite to the contrary, Chief Justice, Ms. Auer's own expert witness acknowledged that when a duplicitous, self-serving agent like Tory Auer wants to hide things and work behind the broker's back, there's practically nothing that a broker can do to prevent that. That was Ms. Auer's own expert testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lasky.
Madam Chief Justice and Justices of the Court, good morning. I'm here on behalf of Tory Auer. She is the plaintiff initially, now the appellee in this case. I'd like to clear up a few misunderstandings if I could. Number one, Your Honor, you asked directly a moment ago whether Keller Williams did anything to try to explain that they were unaware. I was the trial counsel for the plaintiff in this case. I took the Keller Williams representative as my first witness, as on cross-examination. And after the gentleman indicated his name and his position with the company thereafter, and you can read the transcript, we dealt with a lot of, I don't know, I don't remember. I asked simple questions such as, do you have an orientation program? I don't know. What do you do to search for conflicts when you first hire someone? I don't know. And I think what's important in this case is I took this witness as on cross, as you do in a civil case sometimes, and that witness and his counsel made the decision not to testify at all during this case. What the appellee and the Ohio Board and the U.S. Board of Realtors want is they want this honorable court to do the heavy lifting. And I would submit, if you look at the Court of Appeals decision, it was affirmed unanimously. And one of the things they looked at is the egregious conduct here. And one of the other things discussed by opposing counsel, where he discusses some of these rogue activities in these management companies. The jury was given interrogatories in this case, and it was clear. They went property by property, chronologically. A lot of the management things he's talking about and rehab of properties occurred later, after she left Keller Williams. What we are here for today is for the fact that Keller Williams failed to supervise. In the transcript, it's undisputed there were 80 salespeople in this organization supervised, according to the transcript, by one broker.
Were they employees or independent contractors? And does that make a difference?
Your Honor, I think under the statute, they were listed as independent contractors.
And there's a duty to supervise under the revised code?
Well, because they are realtors, everything they do as salespeople must be through the broker. And we're talking not only the issue of money, as Justice O'Neill asked earlier in the questioning, we're talking about writing up contracts. And I think it's important when the witness for Keller Williams was asked on cross-examination, how did you supervise this person? And his comment was, and it's in the transcript very clearly, indicated, well, we have a room where they can watch a computer, but I can't make them sit there. That was his comment about supervision. So I think your question is, was this person an independent contractor? That was the employment definition set forth between the parties. But under 4735 and under the law in other cases in Ohio, when a salesperson is acting for the broker. In other words, when they are taking in money, they cannot do that independently. All the closing statements, all the checks, as to this case that we are here for today, were in the name of Keller Williams.
If I understand the argument posed by Mr. Piper, it relates to the verdict that was returned against Keller Williams and none of the verdicts that were returned against Jamie Paleth. And the only general verdict form is the one which is signed by six members of the jury, and it is a verdict for $135,200 pursuant to interrogatory number two.
That's correct.
And interrogatory two says that the jury finds damages sustained by your client, Tory Auer, as a direct result of being fraudulently induced by defendant Jamie Paleth to purchase real estate at Belden Street, Harvard, Emerson, Richmond Avenues in Dayton. And the verdict is $135,200.
That is correct.
Now, how does the fraudulent inducement by Paleth translate, in your view, to a judgment against Keller Williams?
Because those sales, and you'll note, as the Court of Appeals decision indicated, trial jury did not award a judgment against Keller Williams for the total amount of the Auer loss. Tory Auer lost about $535,000 invested that she never got back. Some of those investments were made after she left.
Well, there were other interrogatories.
Yes.
With findings. For example, interrogatory four is a judgment, or it's a finding of $120,000. But that doesn't relate to Keller Williams, right?
Correct.
Okay, so all I want you to try to explain to me is what the translation is between the answer to interrogatory number two and the judgment entered against Keller Williams, because it seems to relate, in if I'm reading it correctly, to the fraudulent inducement of Jamie Paleth.
And that was then that is correct, and that is while she was with Keller Williams. And I think what
so is it your view that what is the theory of liability for an individual who fraudulently or commits fraud as to have that effect?
Well, Ohio has engaged in this fiction where they allow realtors, salespeople, to be called independent contractors.
Okay, and if she was an independent contractor, how do you translate a finding of fraudulent conduct to another party?
Justice O'Neill asked early on in his examination of Mr. Piper, my learned opponent, the fact is that all of these monies were received at closings. This wasn't done in the middle of the night by sleight of hand by someone wearing a mask. She went and said, I believe this property is worth $1,000 when it was worth a dollar. And she did it while she was a salesperson for Keller Williams. And at the closing, Keller Williams received the proceeds.
Do you agree she was an independent contractor, or was she in some different relationship with Keller Williams?
I agree that that's what she was called.
What was she called?
I believe there's case law to support.
Excuse me, what was she called?
I believe she was called an independent contractor.
Okay, so
I'm not disputing that, but I think when you take the activities to their logical end under Ohio law, when she works, because she can't work independently of a broker, that is the whole basis of the relationship between a salesman and a broker. A salesman is supposed to be supervised. Sometimes they're brand new, as in this case. The hope being, they're supervised, they're mentored, they're observed.
The objection comes, if I understood Mr. Piper's argument, to the jury instruction that says, if you find Paleth committed fraud with respect to the sale of these properties, then you must find in favor of the plaintiff and against Keller Williams. And I think Mr. Piper is objecting. Said he did object at trial to that instruction.
And specifically,
seems to be the crux of the position advanced by Keller Williams, because they're claiming, if I understand the argument, maybe I don't, that you don't translate an independent contractor fraud to a broker.
Except under 4735, it's very clear previously.
What does that say?
That is the Ohio Revised Code section dealing with the issue of brokers and realtors, and it very clearly states that a realtor cannot act independently of a broker. Everything that they do potentially binds the broker, unlike other agency relationships in Ohio.
So if they commit fraud, the broker's bound by the fraud?
Yes.
That's the answer.
Yes.
Do you have a specific section of the code that you're relying on?
I would say that I would be happy to give you case law, which we cited in our brief, the Ansman case, amongst others. And the Court of Appeals relied on those cases in their unanimous decision upholding the judgment in this case.
Is that a fraudulent inducement case as well?
I'm sorry?
Is that a fraudulent inducement case as well?
Yes, there were two of them. Out of the Second District Court of Appeals, and one, in fact, that was argued, I believe, before this court, and it dealt with a grievance with a realtor, and they found that when there is vicarious liability, it's in the scope of employment. Because of that special relationship of a realtor and a broker, a realtor cannot act independently, but can only act with the approval of and through the employment of the broker. And there are things that you can do to prevent the kinds of problems that may have occurred here, obviously.
So if I'd like to clarify that, because
sure.
I want to go back, I think, to something that Justice O'Donnell said or asked you about. It's your position, and it's the holding of the Court of Appeals, that as a matter of law, the broker is liable.
I think, if I may, obviously, in each case, it's a question of fact, but when the jury has come back after listening to the facts and finds that the broker's liable, at that point, it becomes a matter of law.
Well, is there a question of fact or not? I mean, I'll just tell you what's confusing me here is,
sure.
is as I read the opinion and as I thought I understood your argument, it really is, once you are a broker, you are responsible for the actions of your agent. But you started off your argument today talking about the lack of supervision. So is there something that this broker or another broker could do to avoid rogue actions by an agent? Let's say they had the best training program in the country, but this agent still did what she did. Would they still be liable?
Well, I think one of the issues that you have to get into when you discuss that, when you say what can a broker do to avoid this, and that is review the documents as they're coming in. The defendant, Keller Williams, was asked by me, what did you do to monitor or police these activities that you say are inappropriate?
But let's assume they did that. Let's assume that you have a broker who they thought they had a training program in place, they thought they had monitoring in place, but they still have a rogue agent. Are they still liable as a matter of law because the agent performed those actions while under the supervision of the broker? Are they liable as a matter of law?
Well, Your Honor, the facts you've set forth obviously are hypothetical.
Yes.
And I think each case is fact sensitive, as was this case. In this case, there was no supervision. There was no attempt to look at anything. There was
if
no.
If you can answer the hypothetical,
sure.
Because that's where my concern is depending on what we write.
Sure.
If what we write is, as a matter of law, if you're a rogue agent, the broker's liable. And it doesn't really matter how much training you have or how much supervision you have, you are going to be liable. That's my question. Is that what you're asking for?
I'm not asking for that because that is not the fact pattern in my case.
So how do we avoid writing something that doesn't affect that fact pattern?
Respectfully, I would urge you affirm the case and say the facts in this case were so egregious after reviewing it, and the lack of supervision was so apparent with one broker and 80 salespeople that something must be done to more properly supervise your independent contractors, because even though they're independent contractors, they cannot work independently of the broker.
Counsel, let me follow Justice French on that, though. The Court of Appeals is relying, it looks to me like, on Zell versus Superintendent.
Yeah.
And that case stands for the proposition a real estate broker will be held vicariously liable for intentional torts committed by salesmen acting within the scope of their authority. Is that what you're asking us to say today?
Yes.
But then doesn't the scope of authority belong, doesn't that issue have to go to the jury? I mean, here we don't have an interrogatory stating that she was within the scope of her authority. I think that's the concern. When an independent contractor goes outside of what is presumed to be actions taken on behalf of the broker, you're saying if that doesn't matter, the scope of authority issue doesn't have to be determined by the jury?
No, I think in certain cases it does, but I think in this case the facts were such, and again, there were two different periods of time. The first period of time was when she was with Keller Williams. The second period of time for which the jury considered
Counsel,
was after.
What exactly happened with Keller Williams here? When she was a agent under the brokerage of Keller Williams,
yes,
there were five properties?
Yes.
And there was a purchase price for each one of those five properties?
Correct.
And do you say the setting of that purchase price was fraud?
Well, in one of the cases, she set up a separate company and bought it from someone for approximately $8,300 to $8,700. And then using that company's name while working for Keller Williams all this time, she then resold that same piece of property in the Dayton area for $60,000 to Ms. Auer. And
okay.
So clearly she benefited while she was with Keller Williams. And again, Keller
How
Williams
How did Keller
got the-
Williams facilitate her original purchase and then her listing under a fictitious name?
They agreed to have her license with them.
No. Let's talk about that particular property.
Sure.
You admit that she did not do that with the knowledge or the help of Keller Williams.
I would agree that Keller Williams knew nothing about anything if you read the testimony of Mr. Stamen.
Okay, but let's take a look at the property you just described where she bought it for
$8,700.
Okay. And turned around and listed it with Keller Williams under a fictitious identity, okay?
Yes.
They had no idea that their agent was the owner of this property, correct?
Well, you can look under the Secretary of State and see who the incorporator was, and very clearly,
well, wait.
Her.
All right, so you're saying that is the responsibility of a brokerage firm is to, for everybody that lists their property, or lists property with them, to look at the Secretary of State's, was her name on the Secretary of State's registration?
Yes.
As a partner in that operation?
As the sole owner.
Okay.
And let me say this, again.
Wait a minute, let me just.
Sure.
So she gets this property, she has this corporation or partnership, she is the sole entity, and then she lists this with Keller Williams. All the time she's an agent at Keller Williams. And she doesn't disclose to them, hey, you know, this owner is really me.
She does disclose, it says dual agent on the sales contract, because Keller Williams makes commission over and over within a month.
Okay, so she says she's a dual agent, she's representing the seller and the buyer.
Yes, but
does she identify who the seller is?
She identifies the seller as this corporate name. She doesn't say, by the way, I'm the owner. But again, in context.
Well, that happens all the time where there's dual agencies and you don't go behind, you know, anything further. So then she sells this property for $60,000 to your client.
Yes.
Okay. And she does this with four other properties.
She doesn't buy them herself with four others, but she does sell.
She sells
other properties.
Four other properties.
Yes.
And you're not alleging that there was fraud in the establishment of the purchase price?
Well, there was fraud in other situations involving some of these properties, because if you look at the transactions, if someone had sat down and looked at who the seller was on this one, well, wait a minute, they're the buyer on this one, and we got a commission on this, and then Jamie Polyeth immediately turns around and sells that property to my client. So in other words, no one was looking at even any of the sales documents to track, keeping in mind in the Dayton area at the time this was happening, 07, we are in foreclosure heaven. No one is buying properties in these neighborhoods. They're all being foreclosed. Suddenly, Ms. Polyeth is selling four and five properties in this target neighborhood over and over and over again, and then
she's selling the same property several times.
Yes.
All right. And then she sells them to your client.
Yes.
And the revolving door stops at that point, and she becomes then a property manager.
And she leaves
rehab.
Keller Williams.
Okay.
Yes.
And she leaves Keller Williams at that time. So the fraud that you want to, you know, visit upon Keller Williams is the fact that they didn't realize that these properties, or maybe they did realize, were sold over and over again.
Amongst other things, yes.
What are the other things?
Their failure to supervise her, their failure to...
Wait a minute, let's stop right there.
Sure.
Supervise her doing what?
To make sure that she was not engaged in self-dealing and things like that.
And how would they have been able to ascertain that?
I think if you look at the closing statements, where they're getting a commission over and over on the same piece of property, and again, realtors don't work in a vacuum. They know that things in Dayton, Ohio have been bad for a long time, and in this target neighborhood, everyone's foreclosing. No one's buying. Suddenly, people are buying these four or five properties over and over again.
And when you say over and over, how many times really?
Maybe two, three in a period.
Each property was sold two or three times within a very short period of time.
Yes, yes.
And that was the red flag.
Yes.
And what would they have done at that point? Said, Jamie, why are you selling so many properties?
No, why are you selling the same property over and over again? And who are these other individuals?
And are they each for increasing prices?
Oh, yes. When the market's collapsing around, and again, that's why it's an out-of-town buyer, Jamie Polyeth from Dayton, Tori Hours from California.
Right.
She's flying in, and she's saying, this property's worth $90,000 that I just sold you for $60,000. And as the testimony was at the trial, she couldn't get a loan on it for any amount when she tried, when Hour tried to refinance to get some of her money
so
back.
So she paid cash for all of these properties?
Yes. Yes.
And was there an appraisal done on the properties?
Jamie Polyeth provided an individual who got her appraisals.
And was that a licensed appraiser?
I hazard to guess. I don't want to guess, Your Honor. But it was a friend of Ms. Polyeth.
Okay, well, it does make a difference, doesn't it, for the real estate company to see who the appraiser is for these properties? I mean, if it's not a licensed appraiser, yes, I would agree that there's a red flag there on behalf of Keller Williams to take an appraiser or an appraisal from someone who's not licensed to do so.
Keller Williams, again, was not in the loop on the issue of the appraisals. These were given directly from Polyeth to this friend of hers who did these appraisals.
Okay, so that's not, that isn't on Keller Williams' watch then.
Right, and we weren't saying that was.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
I will be mercifully brief. The theory or the suggestion that there is some negligent supervision claim here, that's not involved in this case. I would urge the court to review the reply brief that I filed. That's not even an issue before the court. That was not, it was alleged in the complaint but never pursued at trial. The only claim that against Keller Williams at trial was the intentional tort claim. Justice French, you had mentioned the notion that it is a question of fact whether an independent, an employee, and or an independent contractor or an agent is within the scope of their employment or agency. That has been consistently this court's position over years and years and years. And it is a question of fact. That is why the Court of Appeals decision in this case is so flatly inconsistent with this court's prior precedent, with 4735.18b, not directly applicable, but the General Assembly has stated that for license law purposes, a broker can only be held liable if it knows about the misconduct of an agent. Again,
When did Califf leave Keller Williams?
First week of December of 2007.
And why?
So she conned a woman who later turned out to be her broker, Judith Lancaster. She was also with
she
Keller
terminated,
Williams.
She terminated, or did she leave?
No, she left. She one jump ahead of the wolf. No one had any idea. She found Judith Lancaster, who was a broker, to lend this patina of legitimacy to the companies that she was already running illegally.
The question I have is, she terminated her relationship on December 1st?
Correct. December, in the first week, yes.
Voluntarily?
Yes.
All right.
So that she could pursue the scheme that bring it to fruition with a broker.
So she got another broker to be her legitimate frontier?
Correct. That broker turned out to be Judith Lancaster, who was Tory Auer's expert and who acknowledged that Keller Williams, and this is a quote, was very strict in how it reviewed all the paperwork necessary to make the contracts and other agency-related documents proper and appropriate. There is no suggestion, no claim being pursued in this case at this juncture of negligent supervision. That's really kind of an effort to tar the reputation.
Well, the actual knowledge is, or knowledge of wrongdoing or known or should have known.
Well, that has never been, it's never even been alleged in this case.
That they knew that something was amiss.
Correct.
The multiple sales of properties in a foreclosed, depressed neighborhood was not a red flag, as your opposing counsel would have?
There's only one property out of the, I think, five that we're talking about that fell into that category, where, again, Jamie Poliath bought it under one of her corporate names,
right.
Sold it under one of her corporate names. That's all unknown, again, to Keller Williams. That's only involved in one of the properties.
The other properties were not sold multiple times?
No. There's no suggestion of that in the record.
Thank you.
I thank the court.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decisions. Thank you, gentlemen. Shall we adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.